Welcome to the Money and Time Machine podcast, where you can learn how to rage against the theft of your financial future by listening to a unique perspective on what's holding you back from a life of more money and more time.
Hello and welcome to the Money and Time Machine podcast. I'm your host, Justin Paul. Welcome to episode 230. Let your decisions be yours. I'm responding to two questions from listeners, one of whom has felt that making any financial decisions seems so much more difficult than in times past. So I'll answer you directly, but I'll answer you through my own personal experiences, okay? Because it's all I have. I don't know you that well. I don't have enough information or data. So I'm not going to preach to you. I think if I use my own experiences, it might resonate and you can take from that. So the first question I'm going to ask you is that accurate? Is that idea or belief that you have that making any financial decision seems so much more difficult now than in times past? So I'm going to ask you, is that accurate? Is that actually true? Is it possible that we have been conditioned to make basic decisions for ourselves, but when it comes to some of the more important decisions, that somehow there's always someone more or better qualified to make those decisions for you? It doesn't matter in what endeavor, there always seems to be somebody who is better credentialed, more qualified, has got more letters behind the name, and so as a result, we usurp our responsibility and we bow down to other people. And I will always remind you that not deciding is the same as making a decision, because regardless of whether you do or don't, it's the consequences of your decisions, or indecisions for that matter most. There is a price to pay. So to my mind and my way of thinking, just choose the price you're prepared to pay and get on with the job of making decisions, because the better you become at making decisions, the less stress and the more confidence you harness when you do. As I have found, I can live with the decisions I have made that haven't worked out. But I couldn't live with the decisions others have made on my behalf. And I flatly refuse to live that way again. Now, I'll keep on in the spirit of the question that was asked. Inflation and the cost of living has been center stage as we head into another federal election year in Australia. It's been interesting to see how many people here in Australia have been stockpiling their silver collection. I understand that bullion dealers have never been busier. And that's interesting because it reaffirms my thoughts that many people are suspect that our current economic situation is far from the, and I'll quote, envy of the world, a comment made many times by our current Prime Minister. But of course, you'd expect him to say that. I mentioned in a few of my very early podcasts that the GFC, which was circa 2008, was for me the awakening that the world didn't run and operate as I was encouraged to believe and think it was. In fact, I asserted that the GFC was the death of the current financial system as it is, and it's been on life support ever since. For the record, I'm not anti-capitalism, but I do believe the current system or mode of operation isn't sustainable. I became inquisitive more so as to the cost of the 2008 GFC on the global economy, what it really meant to be on this blip on the economic radar. And for your reference, a blip is a temporary or insignificant phenomenon, especially a brief departure from the norm. It was an anomaly, I was told by all who thought they knew better, all the political and economic commentators. But then I found people whose sentiments echoed that it was and had been predictable, that you could see it coming. And ever since then, I've been on a path of learning to see the world through a different set of filters, a different set of eyes. So that posed another question. What will be the fallout of the COVID pandemic? No one knows for sure, but rest assured there will be a fallout, a kind of cumulative and compounding effect. There was and has been a fallout from the GFC, but it's been buried under the insurmountable debts incurred ever since. another blip on the radar, namely COVID, as many people thinking the same question, what will be the ramifications, the economic consequences of the last few years? I mean, we can't just assume that we will just resume from where things left off prior to 2019. It just doesn't work that way. The massive global debt of 2008, which we were reliably informed was astronomical. Fast forward, and that debt went into the silly stratosphere. It didn't disappear, or we didn't even make a dent in reducing that debt since then. Now, here we are in 2022, a federal election looming here in Australia, and what is clear is that inflation and debt is on the table again. Surprise, surprise. Who thinks Russia and the Ukraine story alone would account for the challenges as we face the cost of lettuce at $5 a head? No. Like so many distractions, I don't get bamboozled by the headlines. I'm aroused as to why the headlines are what they are and in whose interest it is to have us fooled by the headlines. What is happening behind the curtains? The main thing happening behind the curtains, I suspect, has been the printing of money. In Australia, we have inflation running at approximately 5.1%, last I checked, and the healthy skeptics, so those guys that are poking the BS bear, would suggest that it's as high as 9 to 10%, certainly the highest we've experienced in a couple of decades. It seems middle-class families have been feeling the pinch for a while, and it seems to be getting worse. The question on many people's minds is whether wages growth will keep up with the rising cost of living, and I suspect that it won't matter who gets in a week or so. And the reason being is we have too much debt, thanks to the Reserve Bank of Australia. And now we have two sides of the political divide, one having us believe that proper fiscal policy in its own right is why Australia has been able to navigate the craziness of the last 5 to 10 years. And of course, we have the other side, if they come into power, who will have you believe that they will improve things even more. Now, the other reason why I don't think it really matters, I heard something interesting today, you know, regarding the rising wages, if wages keeps up with inflation, and that it really didn't matter, because if hypothetically the inflation rises by 10%, even if wages were to rise at the rate of 10%, here's the issue. You will get taxed at 30%. So, you know, for every $10, $3 will go to the government. And so even then, you're still behind the eight ball as far as inflation is concerned. Let me get back to my earlier question. What did we think of government's fiscal economic responses worldwide to the COVID debacle? I don't think too many people did think about the consequences. You know, when people are in survival mode, as long as you can give me something to appease me and keep my family fed and keep the roof over my head, most people don't really think about the consequences of economic reactions or responses. And did we even contemplate that we would not suffer consequences of money printing? Once again, I think in the domain of people who are suffering, these questions don't even come anywhere across that that cognitive space. Of course, that was always going to lead to inflationary issues, all the money printing and the QEs. And I haven't even touched on our very low interest rates, which was never sustainable. And as usual, Mr. and Mrs. Average Citizen will always foot the bill. We always have, and we always will. Like the 2008 GFC, our current economic debacle was entirely predictable, some would say. The question for you is, have you positioned yourself to see yourself and your family through this economic phase in our lives? The way I see it, our addiction to free stuff is partly to blame here in Australia, so I'm not going to just lambast the government, but our feelings of entitlement as a collective consciousness, that is. Why? Because like any government, it's political suicide to not appease the public at large, whose expectations are that the existing government and whoever might come in the next week will make our lives easier. I've always said and agreed with other sentiments similar, that one way to make our lives easier, and this may sound contrarian to some, is to start limiting unnecessary spending and looking to cut costs so that we might achieve a balanced budget. I'm talking about a federal budget here. Instead, as forward estimates suggest for us here in Australia, that we are not going to have our heads above water for quite some time to come. Forward estimates, for those of you not familiar with the term, are budget projections for revenue, expenses, and financial position for 3 years beyond the current or budgeted fiscal year. So in other words, it would be political suicide to suggest that Australian people must not and should not expect the existing or whichever government comes into power in the next week to tighten up their belts, that we can somehow spend our way out of this conundrum. The mere implication of anything other would nail the political coffin lid faster than a pneumatic nail gun. It's a more likely outcome, I suspect, that unrealistic expectations of the general public are to be encouraged by an overpromising government. The inflationary issues will continue to ensue. Fuel costs, if we thought it was bad before, I think they'll rise. Rising food costs, well, they'll just continue. Rising energy costs, they've already predicted that's going to increase by 10%. And whatever else will impact you and everyone around you know that it's only going to go in one direction, and that's up. Now, this is great for people like you and me if you can see the flip side of all of this, because you and I will continue to purchase more commodities like precious metals. You and I may continue to invest in some cryptocurrencies, and I encourage you to do your own research as to whether it's suitable for you and your financial needs. Every spare dollar that I can get my hands on, I invest in asset classes that can amplify my money. This, of course, will be challenging for some people since many people live in debt. Okay, living in debt has become normalized now. Okay, I'm going to live for so long, so I may as well pay debt for as long as I'm alive and live the good life. Add to that rising cost of living pressures, and the question I get all the time is, you know, what if I don't have money to invest? Well, if that's true, if you believe that you don't have money to invest, and if that's true, where did you get the money to buy the new clothes? If that's true, where did you get the money to buy new gadgets, the new car, the trip away for a holiday now that COVID restrictions have eased and you just feel like you've been in prison? 9 times out of 10, it's not that you don't have the money, but that possibly your values are different to what you might think. You just may value other things as being more important, which may have you logically concluding that you don't have the money or as much money. So it's not about right or wrong. This is something that I discovered in myself. I want to be rich. I want to invest. But then when I listed my top 10 values, the thing I thought I wanted was actually low on the values hierarchy. So it wasn't that I didn't want to make money at the time. It wasn't that I didn't want to be rich. It's just that I wanted a whole lot of other things more than what it is I claimed. I mentioned many a times in some of my earlier podcast shows, invest in things like precious metals, but it seems for some like an archaic and relatively stupid idea, as someone said to me not so long ago. Look at the rising prices of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. How in God's green earth will buying silver help me? One would think that buying highly underrated assets would be in line with what people did when Bitcoin was worth cents in the dollar. How short our memories seem to be. But then again, I can't help people whose thinking, or should I say thunking, which is a second-hand form of thinking, gets in the way of reason. It's better to have a little than to have nothing. Stepping up, I have a few friends today, not as in literally today, but in recent times, who purchased homes in the last year or so, and they're scared out of their minds. Why? Well, they bought at what some would suggest is or was at the peak of the rising cost of housing, of the housing market. So they spent all of their savings just to get into the house of their dreams. And now with a rocky job market and with interest rates set to rise, they're having sleepless nights. And that, ladies and gentlemen, without a baby in the house. This is the reality versus the headlines, where the masses go silly And like lemmings, we follow each other with this unerring sense of judgment, and when the dust settles, reality looks a lot different. In fact, in Australia, at last check, 42% of Australians live with mortgage stress. 42%. And need I remind you again about the subprime mortgage dilemma that emanated out of the last GFC? Not that I think we will see a catastrophic decline in our economic demise, and that's because here in Australia, our four big banks are highly leveraged with mortgages. That is to say that as much as 60% of all their business is in the form of mortgages. So our banks have an incentive to carefully manage that debt by ensuring interest rates do not get out of control. But that, to my way of thinking, only increases the probability of inflationary issues or concerns remaining with us for a few years yet. So whatever pain we think we've experienced these last few years, they are going to be with us for a while to come. And with those inflationary pressures hovering around our heads, it's conceivable that banks will play around with the concepts of negative interest rates in the ensuing years. It got bandied around probably about 2 or 3 years ago where it was commonplace. And I think that was just to soften the market for you know, in the future. And so they've subliminally dropped that in there so that at least that idea has been floating there for some time. Now, it's an idea that seemed, for some, I would imagine, ridiculous at one stage. But given other economic playgrounds of recent years, let's look at the USA as a prime example, it's an idea that seems more plausible now. What does all of this mean? Well, for me, it highlights how when things have gotten so bad that no one in power wants to be the one that says what we all know we should do, which is to bite the bullet and tighten up the fiscal belt and make the kinds of fiscal policies and sacrifices that gets our heads out of the clouds and our feet firmly planted on the ground. But I doubt we'll ever get that from the political cohort that we have at present. If not, all that'll happen is we will continue to see all manner of gimmicks, political gimmicks, economic gimmicks, financial gimmicks, and possibly well-meaning, but definitely well-sounding policies that do nothing but get us further into debt. Just go back and have a good look at the economic debacles. There was a great book written by Roger Bootle, Money for Nothing. And so I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, we are not unique. You can't make this stuff up. Okay, for all our skills and our intellect, from a political point of view and from an economic point of view, the things we come up that seem so glorious and great end up being our greatest burden. The result may yet be the worst thing any of us can imagine, which is the greatest depression in our history, something that I wouldn't wish for anyone. Now, I'll conclude on a separate and the second question that was posed, and that of cryptocurrency. I was asked some advice, and I'm grateful that some of my listeners may want some advice, but by now you should know my personal thoughts on providing advice, which is, I don't provide any. Why? Because my whole podcast is predicated on getting you to make your own decisions. I want for you to make effective choices, which is why I harp on and on about what I do and say, is because I know there are different ways of thinking, and they all give birth to different results. The way of thinking where you think that other people, like your bosses, like the government, lay awake at night thinking about you and how to make your life easy is a fantasy. It simply doesn't exist. Unless you start to do your own thinking, like me, you might, if you haven't already figured out, that you have a better chance of success under your own guidance than that of well-meaning, albeit misguided, people who claim to have your best interest at heart. What I'm encouraging you to do is to rage against the theft of your financial future. And the only way you can do that is by taking personal responsibility. You don't necessarily have to go all the way, but at least do some research. At least question the beliefs and the values. At least have a look at your results and say, hey, you know, I'm in my 40s, I'm in my 50s, and to date, my financial results are woeful. I mean, that's what I did, okay? And I'm smart enough to know that if I carry on the way I was carrying on, the end result was predictable. But luckily for me, I figured out, hey, I'm running out of time. Okay, I don't always have another 10 or 20 years every time I make a mistake to start from scratch. So that's the very least that I would encourage you. It's the very least reason why I do this podcast is to upset some of you, to get you thinking. You know, if you're pissed off at me and you're mad, look, I apologize. I didn't mean to do it, but I'm glad. So at the end of the result, you now need to take personal responsibility for whatever is coming up for you. Okay, because trust me, all the crappy, shitty feelings that you're going through, all the crappy results you've had, I've been there. Okay, so I know what I'm talking about. I've got 48 years of personal experience that I can share with you if you want more. Now, back to the question I was asked about cryptocurrency. What do I make of this volatility of the crypto market in lieu of the last week's, and I'll quote this, crazy up and down movements? The answer is I don't have any thoughts. And then I was asked if I invest in crypto, and the answer is yes. But here's why I'm not overly concerned about the headlines of late. And I've read it all, anywhere from Warren Buffett's claim that crypto is evil and worthless, and all the way to the fanatics who believe that cryptos are the second coming. I learned what I know about cryptocurrency by researching and talking to people in the know. And I got to understand their thinking, their reasoning behind what they believe. That said, I have never allowed myself to be sidetracked by the big ones like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But I do hold some, and I have ventured into some of the lesser known ones and invested in those more so. And no, I will not be revealing who and what. The point is that cryptocurrency is a new asset class. It's a much younger asset class. There was a time, and not so long ago, that I held a view that I was not interested in crypto for reasons based on my formerly held biases that it was a fad. I told myself that I would wait and see, and then, and only then, would I decide. Well, since that way of thinking, I observed people making money. And yes, many were diehards, but I decided that just in case this new technology would eventually develop a solid foundation, and that my qualitative research proves to be reasonable, then I would be open to investing prudently. I'm able to listen and entertain people's views and their rationale, and let me emphasize that their rationale is theirs, not mine. And that ultimately, it's always up to me and you to make decisions that are in our best interests. As for the volatility, I'm comfortable with the volatility because I know why I'm investing in cryptocurrencies. And I appreciate the inherent dangers. But I first had to make sense of cryptocurrencies before I invested into crypto. And I'm very attuned to my own personal style, my own reasoning and rationale, and where it fits into my investment portfolio. I suspect that for many people, too much fear lingers in their decision-making process. They are too easily influenced by the chatter, the innuendo and cues of the marketplace. You are more akin to a ball in a pinball machine getting knocked from pillar to post with no control. And you have no clear reasoning and rationale for wanting to get into the cryptocurrency market or the cryptocurrency space beyond the fear of missing out and quite possibly making a quick, fast buck. And for the record, there's nothing wrong with that. You've got to be in it to win it, as the old saying. But it's a very shallow dimension. Okay? So anybody that tells you I'm not in to make a quick buck, what a lot of BS. You know, who wouldn't mind buying something at 10 cents in the dollar and it turns out to be hundreds and thousands of dollars? Of course everybody would like. But if that is your sole purpose, it's not very deep. It's not very deep. Yes, doing anything new is scary and at times overwhelming, but focus on you and what you want out of investing in crypto. you'd be surprised how many people don't take the time to think about it. Part of the big problem with people making decisions is that you've been conditioned. You and I have been conditioned. More precisely, your thinking has been conditioned. And anyone who thinks it hasn't been conditioned, congratulations, you've been conditioned. Your education was primarily based on you getting the right answers, because the wrong answers meant you failed. But that's not how the real world works and operates. Sure, I can already hear the cynics and the skeptics shouting out, getting things right if you're a surgeon or an architect or an engineer is critical. But the marketplace is none of those things. If you don't know who you are, and if you don't know how the outside world stimulates you into reaction or response, then ultimately, even when you think you're in control, you're being controlled. As Robert Greene said, nobody likes to believe that they are operating under some kind of compulsion beyond their control. It is too disturbing a thought. Cryptocurrency acquisition is one form of investing in my future. All I'm doing is positioning myself to take advantage if and should cryptocurrency become a viable and much accepted part of our future moving forward. As for my podcast shows with Amy Rose Goody, where she cited and very clearly said, no one knows what cryptocurrency will look like in the future. And I can live with that. I'm very comfortable in that ambiguity. And secondly, and this should be very clear to those of you that think the way I do, I don't pay much attention to the news articles because they depict the life of people that you and I will never know and whose lives we will never likely emulate. Billions of dollars and billionaires. Look, it makes for exciting drama and TV shows, but it's not part of the reality I've created for myself. And I would recommend you do the same. Otherwise, you'll always be ensconced in the drama of the latest bad news. I simply chose to take personal responsibility, and the more I do, the more comfortable I am with my decisions and choices, and the less I'm influenced by the drama that is currently unfolding, which to me seems every day, if not every other day. So ladies and gentlemen, my time is up. I hope that that helps you. I'm Justin Paul, host of the Money and Time Machine podcast. Till next we speak, please stay safe and bye from me.
Thanks for listening to the Money and Time Machine podcast. And remember, you're either someone else's version of a money and time machine, or you can learn how to become your very own effective money and time machine and to live with purpose on purpose.